Welcome back to And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy. The first Afro-Latino to hold the Hampden County seat wants you to know that, well, he is just like you. Adam Gomez's Senate district consists of West Springfield, two-thirds of Springfield, and a third of Chicopee. The latter two represent more diverse precincts, which mirror him as a real person, Gomez says, who understands the working of multiple jobs and figuring out how to feed his family. Those same struggles, he tells And Another Thing, are what paved the way to Beacon Hill and are now what drives his fight to reduce inequalities in communities like the North End from which he came.
I'm Maya Schwader. Not only is Gomez the first Afro-Latino in this office, he also took office just at the beginning of this year. Assuming a new leadership role like he has is never easy, and in the middle of a global pandemic, that's even harder. As a person who has come from a humble background and now accomplished a big first, we asked him, how does it feel to be where he is?
It feels amazing. One, obviously, being the first person of color in my district to have held a seat. You know, I come from humble beginnings, come from an advocacy background. And, you know, when you're on the ground, you're really working on changing people's lives. So being able to be put in a position to legislate on behalf of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, not only my district, but for all communities, is definitely a blessing. I'm determined to do the best job that I can. You know, it still has a wow factor to it, you know, being called senator.
You were also elected right in the middle of this pandemic. What is it like stepping into this role in the middle of that big of a crisis?
COVID, I think it was a blessing and a curse, right? You suffer from not being in the building as much relationship-wise when you're trying to, you know, build fellowship with your brother and sister senators. But at the same time, it gives me a chance to learn it well, at least through virtual and through at least having more leisure time because I'm not traveling as much back and forth. But then at the same time, leadership has been amazing. I have an amazing mentor, which is Senator Boncori. And I just been really, a lot of senators have been welcoming and giving me a lot of advice.
Where you come from in Western Mass has one of the fastest growing rates of Hispanics in all of the state. And you being the first Afro-Latino to serve in the Massachusetts Senate, joining, of course, current senator and gubernatorial candidate, Senator Chang Diaz. What types of policies are you most focused on to reduce inequalities, not only for the Latinx community, Western Mass, but all of the Commonwealth?
Well, we know that regional equity when it comes to Western Mass is one of the biggest issues that we have. In Western Mass alone, we have, what, six senators? There's six senators in Boston alone. And, you know, when it comes to resources, health, housing, economic development, I want to make sure that, you know, when we're building equity in all of those systems, there's also building wealth within these communities as well. And sometimes, you know, we get the ish end of the stick, to be totally frank. You know, one thing we want to see is people being able to feed their families and get ahead, well-paying jobs, you know, and getting their fair share when it comes to health and access. Everybody wants to make sure that they have a well-paying job, world-class school, you know, and a place where you can breathe. You know, the environment is, you know, up to par. So, you know, when you have communities like myself, where I grew up in the poorest district in the state of Massachusetts, the north end of Springfield, we just want to be seen. We just want to be heard. We want to have access to those resources like everyone else. So that's one thing and what reason and motivated me to run for state senator. And obviously to be able to break some of those grass ceilings because, yeah, I'm probably one of the first, but I'm determined to make sure that I'm not the last.
What do you think it says that right now it's just you and Senator Chang Diaz representing the Latinx community?
It's humbling to be able to represent the Latinx community, but I'm just a senator that just happens to be Latinx. I'm Afro-Latino. I grew up hip-hop. I grew up Black in America, you know, and the most important thing Latinx folks need to understand is that, you know, our oppressors just spoke a different language. I think that the truth and the fact of the matter is our histories are definitely intertwined. But I think, you know, growing up in America with the different issues that are before us, you know, we have to be on the same side of equity and inclusion. And one of those reasons for me to embrace that I'm Black and I speak Spanish. And you know what? I have a Euro side to me, too. You know, the truth is just to be able to own your truth. So that's something that's why I continuously, you know, beat my chest and tell people, you know what? Yeah, I'm Latino. I'm Latinx. But I'm also a Black man as well, because, you know, once we put that into perspective, we can actually move on and really talk about unity. That's that word, unity and community. It's there. We can't build community if we're not unified and stepping foot. There's nothing wrong with being pro-Black. There's nothing wrong with being pro-Latino. We have to make sure that we're there for our communities. But then when we come together, we become that collective majority. We just want to be able to thrive in with fairness with everyone else.
So in addition to being a father and a state senator, you are also a small business owner. And I bring that up because you came out in support of the millionaires tax. When we covered this on And Another Thing, we spoke with a small business owner and someone from the Beacon Hill Institute, both of whom said that the millionaires tax would be very bad for small business, that it would not generate as much revenue as advocates are saying it would. What's your response to this?
My response is we're trying to build for the future. And we understand when you live the American dream isn't the same as it was 100 years ago. And at the moment, you know, the systems that were in place maybe worked 100 years ago, but we have to figure out how we're going to be able to sustain the things that we have responsibility over. There's mandated issues when it comes to education. Every child needs to be educated. When it comes to housing, everybody has a human right to have a house and to have food on the table. I was one of the ones that early on, I advocated and I canvassed and I must have submitted almost 10,000 signatures for the Fair Share Amendment. And in capitalism, for certain systems to work, certain taxations need to exist so then we can be able to support infrastructure, so we can be able to support, you know, roads, streets, and education and higher learning. That just doesn't come out of thin air. And if we can help somebody climb out of poverty, because the passport out of poverty is education, and with a degree, why wouldn't I want to put $40,000 out of my $1 million that I made to making sure that I'm not incarcerating somebody with that $40,000, but putting somebody into school and educating them so then they can thrive and be there and be a upstanding citizen.
You're listening to The Monday Conversation on And Another Thing, where we devote our show to one in-depth conversation with a single guest. This episode is a rebroadcast of our summer conversation with Massachusetts State Senator Adam Gomez.
How important is infrastructure for you as you see how it's working in Eastern Massachusetts, but Western Mass has been left behind in this conversation? How involved are you, or how focused are you on helping to bridge the gap?
So the truth is, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to be in this position. We don't have a train, right? We don't have east to west yet, right? We don't connect, but east to west is paramount. I think that it's going to be extraordinary once we're able to do that. And it's just going to bring dollars to the economy and folks can get the work. Because here in the Western Mass, you know, I have one of the biggest immigrant communities that live in my district, but then they work north of my district, which is right there in the farms of in Hadley and stuff. And we want to make sure that people can move around safely. But if we had those trains and we had the access to infrastructure, maybe that's a way of getting into folks to get to A to B, let it be healthcare facilities or get into school. We need access. Western Massachusetts has been left behind for quite a long time.
You mentioned the Work and Family Mobility Act, which you've come out in support of. One of the things that this act would do is allow everyone who's a resident of Massachusetts, regardless of their immigration status, to get a driver's license.
Absolutely.
What would this do for immigrants of all stripes who are living in Western Massachusetts?
One, there'd be a downturn of folks driving without a license on the roads. unregistered, uninsured. That's one issue. But secondly, we would keep families together. I think that a lot of people are racially profiled, like myself. I've been stopped a couple times because they assumed that I didn't have a license or registration. And then when they figured out who I was, it's, you know, but then there's not so people that have that kind of, you know, they've been living here, you know, for 20 odd years. And maybe dad or mom is undocumented, or they live in a mixed house that their kids are citizens. So, you know, for the most part, we want to make sure that our roads are safe. And this is a way that, one, we can help people get to work safely, because if we don't have a train, just like, you know, public transportation out east, you know, folks are going to get into a car. We have third shift jobs that people don't want to take, that folks are ready and available to be able to work. The immigrant community, they are hardworking people, and they're going to do by any means necessary to get there to provide for their family. So let's make it easier, because in Massachusetts, we're mandated to educate them and we're mandated to give them health care. So let's mandate to make sure that they can get to those institutions to make sure that they're thriving and that their family is safe.
If you had a magic wand, what would be your first big problem in your district that you would want to solve?
How to get everybody back to work. I think that that's one of the biggest things that I hear, not only the work, but, you know, making enough money to be able to sustain and to be able to put food on the table, you know, and be able to thrive and pay the rent. I think people just want to live and not worry. And that's why a lot of, you know, folks, there's like a double-edged sword, right? Folks want to get back to work, but essentially it pays, or it's beneficial to be able to hold on a little bit longer to a benefit. And a lot of people don't want to have this conversation. I might get some, you know, negative feedback on it, but, you know, there's a lot of struggling businesses that are hiring. There's a lot of struggling folks that, you know, want to work.
Could it not be said that perhaps those business owners need to offer more wages, offer better benefits,
right,
for people to get back to work?
Yes, and that was one of the conversations. That's funny that you brought that up, because that was one of the advocated again for $15 an hour. And now we've seen that even $15 an hour is not enough. And we need to figure out how, and obviously that comes with, you know, wages being stagnated for over 30, 40 years. You know, we've been trying to get people to $15 an hour over, I think, up until 2021. But by the time that kind of trajectory happens, we're in a position now that we're looking at, we need $20 an hour, $25 an hour to be able to raise a child. People that work 40 hours a week, they need help too. You know, it's not that people are just sitting around doing nothing.
That's State Senator Adam Gomez. Coming up, we'll dive into his personal journey from getting arrested to getting elected. And another thing on New England Public Media. We'll be right back.
You're listening to And Another Thing. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. On Mondays, we devote our show to a single, in-depth conversation with one guest to learn more about their lives and their impact on our community. Today, we are rebroadcasting one of our favorite conversations that we had earlier this year with Massachusetts State Senator Adam Gomez. He represents parts of Springfield, West Springfield, and Chicopee. He's also the state's first Afro-Latino state senator. We spoke about his experiences with poverty and homelessness growing up in the north end of Springfield, including some run-ins with the law when he was a high school student. You were arrested when you were young, as happens to many Black and brown men. How has that informed the kind of legislator you want to be?
So when I was 17, just for the listeners, I was charged with the mandatory minimum. I ended up pleading out to possession with intent. And they dropped my school zone, even though I was arrested in school, with 10 bags of marijuana. And if I didn't, I was going to spend 2 years in jail, my first criminal offense. I was charged as an adult when I was 17. Obviously, now that age is different. That's what kind of preempted me to just get involved with the advocacy work with the criminal justice reform that was passed in 2017. I was working on that with the Jobs Not Jails Coalition with one of my best friends, Jafet Robles, that's no longer with us. And it was because, you know, that piece of legislation was the one that actually changed my perception and opinion and getting involved with community, because I always had something hanging over my head, you know, when it came to looking for a job and trying to figure out, you know, how I was going to feed the family. And that kind of like little record always chased me. And then obviously now, you know, with the law being changed and the prohibition on marijuana is over here in Massachusetts, obviously not federally, it really drove me to really use my skills and my personal story so that, you know, you can turn your life around and you can be whatever you want to be. You know, some people have changed their and became a lawyer and, you know, been incarcerated and helped people get out of jail. And now they're running for mayor of New York, you know, like, just because you've gotten in trouble once or twice or three times, you know, you can turn your life around and you can be whatever you want to be. I tell people, you can fall on your face 8 times, but as long as you get up 9 and you keep on pushing, I think that's the most important part to this. But I gave it all to God. And for some reason, I give him all my success. And, you know, it's not to put God into it. It's just sometimes, like I said, it that wow factor. You know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the tool shed, but at the same time, I got a heart of gold that when I say I'm going to do something, we're going to make it happen. Or if not, we're going to keep on fighting. And so, you know, being arrested, I'm not going to lie to you. It was I told the judge he was never going to see me again, and he didn't. You know, I'm still a work in progress, but at the moment, I'm a real person that suffered through homelessness, suffered through a criminal background, tried to figure out how I'm going to, you know, feed my family on whatever job it is that I could get, working 2 to 3 jobs. You know, like, I know what that feels like. And even looking at single moms, you know, like, it's not easy. Kids growing up in a broken home. And there's a lot of people that have extraordinary stories. My story is just one of them. And I just hope to inspire people to be able to motivate and be better than they were today, you know, because tomorrow's a new day.
We are speaking with Western Mass native State Senator Adam Gomez. Everyone that knows your name, Western Mass or beyond, they also know your dad. Please tell me how your dad feels about calling his son a state senator. How proud of you is he?
Man, I tell you this, man. That man, as much as I bumped heads with him growing up, he had the right idea. He instilled in me to fight for our people. When he first got here to Springfield, he fought for veterans. And then he fought for ward representation because he knew the dynamic of the council didn't look like what the city represented. And after suing the city and filing the home rule petition with, at the time, Charlie Ryan and a former state representative, but he was president of the council, Jose Tassado, and being able to bring ward representation here, that was one of the reasons why today the Springfield City Council is minority majority. And I was able to serve 5 years, 3 terms on the Springfield City Council. He was never elected, but this year he was able to be appointed into my position. So I was able to give him his flowers, to swear my father in. And right now he's still a tremendous veterans advocate, nationally renowned. You know, he got a phone call from Kamala Harris the other day, vice president. It was absolutely amazing. Like all this extraordinary things that I'm being able to build with him now. And when the times that you didn't want to listen to your folks, and then now that day that we found out we won, first time I told my dad, man, like, bro, like I said, I hope I make you proud. And man, you choked me up with that one. I appreciate the question. My dad is my hero. Gumercindo Gomez, that is my hero. That is Captain Puerto Rico.
You are from Springfield, and the police department has been federally labeled as one of the worst in the entire country. We've done shows on this.
I've been knee deep in that from when I was a counselor.
There's a lot of problems. How can you help them the people?
I've been a victim of, you know, my run-ins, obviously, with the police. And you know, I had like a stigma that followed me. So obviously we could talk about that. That's another story on how, and then becoming a city councilor, and then the tables had turned and all of a sudden, you know, people start treating you with a little bit more respect. But you know, the truth is my mom was a police commissioner, right? So Before there was a police commissioner, there was a police commission. And in Springfield, it was a civilian police commission. And when the fiscal oversight board came, when we were going through some fiscal challenges in the city of Springfield before my time, they eliminated all the commissions and they created commissioners. So fire commissioner, police commissioner, and they thought it would have been more of a way of being able to work through the different issues. And it was, to them, it was the best way to do things. But we knew that there was a lot of police misconduct issues that were happening in Springfield. And there was a lot of nepotism, a lot of different extraordinary things that obviously that has hit the media. There's some things that haven't hit the media. And the Springfield City Council has been fighting for a police commission since, I think, before I was on it, but I was on at least two different times where we tried to vote and override a veto. And then this year we just had to sue the mayor, and it was adjudicated that he has to implement the police commission as soon as possible. But then he appealed it, so now it's in appeals court. And then we have a couple other instances. We were paying out extraordinary amounts of money for police misconduct while I was on the council every single year, up into the millions. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, we're going to see probably more of that. I think our brighter days are ahead of us. We still have a lot of challenges. I know that police reform that was just passed last year, there's a lot of narrative going around the defund the police conversation, which I would like to switch it up and say, it's not about that we don't think that we need public safety, right? But we need to put in perspective of not about defunding the police, but how we're going to refund our communities. So that's the way I want to tell the story is, you know, maybe we have to reallocate funds, and that's onto the councils because I'm onto the Senate. Is how do we continuously refund our communities, making sure that public safety is still steadfast and making sure that police accountability and also resources are available to train some of these police officers. You know, my heart goes out to the last couple of weeks, we've lost a lot of police officers in the line of duty. And I have a lot of family that is in law enforcement, you know, but at the same time, they understand the position that I take. They know that it's not that I don't support the police, but I support accountability first and making sure that our communities are safer by that. So Springfield has, we have a long road ahead of us. We've been making some good inroads.
Thanks for joining us this evening for another edition of And Another Thing. The conversation continues on social media. You can find us across all platforms at AAT on NEPM, or you can visit our webpage on NEPM.org for more information or to listen to other past episodes. I'm Maya Schwader. Have a great evening.